You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 8th of November 2016 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Midori House, coming to you live from Studio One here in London. I'm Andrew Muller. On today's show,
I am not going to let anybody rip away the progress we've made and turn the clock back, sending us back in time.
We're hours away from a once-in-a-lifetime change. We're going to have real change, not Obama change.
We're also hours away from having to remember what life was like without the 2016 US presidential election. My guests Tim Marshall and Jeffrey Kaufman will be here to take one last reading of the runes. We'll ask what this election has done for, or arguably to, America's image abroad. We'll ask if, win or lose, the divisions created and or exploited by Donald Trump are likely to last, and
nobody knows better than Florida how it gets down to just a couple votes, man. In a big, progressive state like this, it got down to just a few votes. And that can make a difference.
Why is it always Florida? When does Maryland get to pick a president? That's all coming up on Midori House on Monocle 24 right now. And welcome to your Election Day Midori House. My guests are Tim Marshall, foreign affairs commentator, editor of The What and The Why, and author of Prisoners of Geography, among others, and Jeffrey Kaufman, the journalist and commentator. Welcome both. And we will start and indeed stay in the US this evening as Americans finally vote in a presidential election which has riveted and or horrified the world like no other in the country's history. Both candidates have now voted, and both voted in New York, so it seems safe to assume that they've cancelled each other out. But we will hear first from our bureau chief in that very city, Ed Stocker. Ed, what is Election Day in New York like? It must be fairly grim pickings for Donald Trump.
Well, you know, everyone's pretty engaged here. Everyone's out and about making sure they vote. I was touring a few polling stations in Brooklyn this morning. You know, a lot of people having their I voted sticker on their clothing, so you can see the people who have voted already this morning. You know, as you were saying, this is a pretty solid Democratic state, hasn't voted for the other side, as it were, since 1984. And so arguably, someone casting their vote here isn't going to influence the outcome of the election particularly, but people very keen to engage and get out there. And the people that I was speaking to this morning seemed to all be voting for Hillary Clinton. Some nerves, I think, due to what's happened in the last few days. But I think more than anything, I think people are kind of quietly confident, but in a way not wanting to be too forthright about it because they don't want to jinx the outcome.
And was Trump, when he went to vote, surrounded by an adoring throng?
No. There were a few jeers, a few people in the crowd, one particular voice shouting that he was a phony, which was interesting. So, you know, those sorts of things definitely happen in New York, and he was there casting his vote in Midtown, but obviously some supporters there as well, but he was getting a bit of a rough time as well.
Ed Stocker, thank you. We'll hear more from you during the night. Well, the candidates have now said all that they're going to say for the time being, and let's focus on what was said at their final rallies last night. And we'll hear some of the final campaign ads that were sent out to encourage Americans to vote one way or the other.
Rip away the progress we've made and turn the clock back, sending us back in time.
We're hours away from a once-in-a-lifetime change. We're going to have real change, not Obama change.
And with just one more day to go, we now have the chance to elect a 45th president who will build on our progress.
We don't have to accept a dark and divisive vision for America.
Today, the American working class is going to strike back, finally. The corrupt politicians and their special interests have ruled over this country for a very long time. Today is our Independence Day.
I want to be a president for all Americans, not just those who support me in this election, for everyone. So tonight, I'm asking for your vote. And tomorrow, let's make history together. I'm Hillary Clinton, and one last time, I approve this message.
This year will be the year the American people say enough is enough. November 8th, get out and vote.
Let's do the whole thing again, or let's not. Jeffrey Kaufman, first of all, what have you made of the closing stages of the campaign?
Please, please, just end this thing. It's not a national nightmare, it's an international nightmare. You know, it's just closing on the same sourness and bitterness, and you know, it's riveting and appalling at the same time. I think it has done so much damage to the American brand, to the American values. Even though we're confident in the outcome, I'm going to say it now as this program begins, and you can play it back tomorrow if I'm wrong, but Hillary Clinton will win. But the damage done in this campaign, I think we won't know for a long time.
We'll come back to that later in the program. Tim, your thoughts on the closing week or so. Did Donald Trump in particular seem noticeably more disciplined to you, both in person and online?
What year is it? Who's the president? It's all been a blur.
You invited someone on the show who just tuned out. Quite wisely, Tim. Brilliant. Nice call. I think we all should have just done that.
Look, it's like Jeffrey said, it's been more of the same. It was unpleasant. It was nasty. I think what I did see from Trump more than before was a little bit of focus, less flailing around. He stuck to auto-cue most of the time. And I think he had his Twitter account taken off him.
That's right.
His advisors said, would you stop all that rubbish you're putting out? It's putting people off. So I think he was more disciplined in the last week, apart from the two things of one carrying on saying it's going to be rigged and having a real pop at the FBI when before he was praising the FBI. So it pretty much carried on as it has for the past year. He's slightly calmed down. He's slightly focused. He stayed mostly on message. He stayed on auto cue. And Mrs. Clinton, I think, went for the statesman-like approach, which is what, if Jeffrey's right and she's going to win, is what is going to be required.
Are you going to leave me out here on my own, aren't you?
No, I'm just leaving you on tenterhooks. That's what's going to be needed afterwards.
We will move on to a few topics we've touched on there in greater depth, but one thing I do want to discuss before we do that is that if the polls are right and Hillary Clinton is going to win this, can we even begin to imagine what a Donald Trump concession speech will be like?
That of course assumes there is one. I mean, he hasn't promised that he will acknowledge the will
indeed,
of the people.
Because I was rereading yesterday in a slightly maudlin reverie of nostalgia, Senator John McCain's absolute masterclass in the genre from 2008. Yeah. And it's slightly difficult, I would say, to imagine Donald Trump rising to those heights of rhetoric and generosity.
I think it was done in Phoenix, that one.
It would have been, yes.
I was in Phoenix at that event, actually, up at a golf club, a country hotel. And as soon as I realized where his victory speech was going to be from, I knew he was going to lose. You don't hold them in a golf club when you're up against Obama. Anyway, I digress. It's exceptionally difficult for him. Has he got the character? If he loses, he's got two choices. He can either carry on being an insurgent, and I think there is a reason for him to carry on being a insurgent, not because he cares, but because I think he's going to launch Trump TV. And I genuinely think Trump TV could be a massive money spinner for him. Fox News makes enormous, enormous sums of money. Trump Indeed. TV can take a large part of that audience and make enormous sums of money. So he could carry on being an insurgent, but he can. So then there's two routes: either be an insurgent and statesmanlike, or be an insurgent and just be a complete cowboy. And I think he has that choice to make. And I think we will find out if he has lost in the manner of his losing.
I read one analysis. So I wish I could claim that it was my own cogent, incisive analysis, but I read one line that I think captured Trump, saying that he has that rare ability in human beings that he is emotionally completely detached from his soul. And So,
assuming he has one.
That's right. Well, it doesn't matter because it's not connected. Yeah. And this is a man who just doesn't know what doing the right thing is. And he's demonstrated that time and again. So it will be worth, those of us here in London on GMT and the listeners around the world, I suspect a lot of us will be staying up through the night. This is the reality show to beat all reality shows. And this is the final episode.
Well, let's take a look at that season finale from a global perspective, because one of the reasons that this presidential election has transfixed the planet like no other is rank befuddlement, an otherwise rancorous globe united by incomprehension that tens of millions of citizens of a prosperous, functional, orderly, and supremely powerful nation would consider electing a volatile, charmless ignoramus whose pitch has revolved running his country down as a dystopic hellhole. Polls of other countries' preferred president have produced a world of landslides for Hillary Clinton, except perhaps unsurprisingly in Russia. Tim, whatever the result, has brand USA abroad been damaged?
I think it has very much, but I think that's been going on for some time. Gore Bush 2000, the hanging chads, you know, couldn't the greatest superpower in the world.
See, I thought that was genuinely heartening, because I was in Iraq at the time for most of that, or for a proportion of that, in Saddam Hussein's Iraq, and Iraqis kept asking me what's actually going to happen, and seemed genuinely perplexed when I said eventually the Supreme Court will make a decision, and one will be president or the other. People asked, you know, what will the loser do? And I said he won't do anything.
Yes, I understand that aspect of it. And Mr. Gore bowed out gracefully.
Indeed he did.
But the whole fiasco of the hanging chads from the superpower made it look a bit shoddy. You then had, for better or worse, the 8 years of Mr. Bush. Now, I think he was actually underrated as a natural politician. I don't think he was as thick as, you know, the world and the comedians wanted to paint him.
Or indeed, as he perhaps wanted people to
think. Yes, but nevertheless, you know, I'm not sure how much he enthralled the world and made them look at America as the shining beacon on the hill. You now have this last awfulness of the past year. And the equally important point, as well as the two candidates, is that it's come at a time when there's been a real lack of belief in mainstream media, the MSM, as it's targeted. The amount of false stories that are now being put up on Facebook and picked up, the fact that the Russians are busy putting out false stories and they have these gullible people around the world that pick up, the fact there's less acceptance, all this has come around at the same time as the two candidates. And I just think that America has not come out of it looking well, which is why it's so important, whoever wins, the manner in which they behave. You remember Obama reached out to the entire Arabic world after 2008, didn't work. Well, whoever wins has got to reach out to the entire world and say, OK, we're back on track, we're steady, we're stable, lay it out, here's what we're going to do.
Jeffrey, do you think Donald Trump represents, Or should the world, I guess, a better question would be, should the world regard Trump as an aberration, the kind of thing that happens from time to time, maybe like you know, Jean-Marie Le Pen reaching the final round in France back whenever that was, 2000
I think
something.
That we're sitting too close to the answer. I think Nigel Farage is proof that he's not an aberration. There is, yeah. You know, this whole notion of left behinds is perhaps a bit misguided, this notion that there is a large underclass of mostly white men who feel that all of the changes in globalization, in values, whether it's sexuality and tolerance, have changed the world as they know it, this kind of romanticization of 1950s white male domination, that's what's fueling this. I think there's some of that. I think that the world has moved in lightning. The U.S., the U.K., Europe have moved. Social values have changed. Manufacturing, as our parents or grandparents knew it, has disappeared, this kind of globalization. And there is a sense of dislocation that these men, Farage, Trump, have really channeled very effectively. So I don't think he's an aberration in that sense. I think that also you have to look at a number of other factors, the media polarization in the U.S., the gerrymandering of seats in Congress, a very complex notion, but essentially so many of the congressional seats in the U.S., in the House of Representatives, have been fixed.
They're jobs for life, basically.
They're jobs for life. And, you know, in an ideal democracy, Republican, Democrat, Labor, Conservative, you need to reach across and include everyone in order to win a majority in your riding, in your district. because of this kind of gerrymandering in the U.S., you have a vast number of members of Congress, mostly Republicans, who never have to explain their position. And that's allowed this hardening of the right in the U.S. So there are a whole bunch of factors that are colliding here, this kind of perfect storm, Fox News and its popularity and the Internet, which has allowed this endless stream of falsehoods, lies, whatever you want to call them, and Trump's brilliant ability to speak this kind of Orwellian doublespeak. You know, we remember war is peace. Well, you know, he's actually doing it.
Yeah. Tim, final thought on this one, and this will be an attempt at optimism. If Hillary Clinton has won this, given the way the world has looked at America during this, if she has won, there will be a sigh of relief, one would think, audible from neighboring galaxies. On the world stage, does that buy her a measure of political capital that she might not otherwise have had? That she can present herself to a massively relieved world as the woman who saved us from Donald Trump?
Massively relieved Western world and American allies world, South Korea, Japan especially, I think. Duterte Harry over in the Philippines will probably prefer to work with her, even though he's more Trump-like himself. Certainly the NATO countries will breathe a huge sigh of relief. And yes, there will be a honeymoon period. Right, you know, here's something that we know what we're dealing with, let's deal with it. Whereas if it's a Trump presidency, everyone's just going to be starting from the very beginning. Did he mean what he says? What is he actually going to do now? What are we going to do next? Is he going to say NATO's obsolete? Now he's, you know, it's starting from year zero. Whereas Clinton, which is why, exactly why, when the FBI said it wasn't going to investigate her 3 days ago, the markets leapt on that because they like stability and they see her as stability. Now, she is a hawk. I'm not saying there's not going to be events, dear boy. There will be under a Clinton presidency. Also, lots of events, possibly wars, who knows? But you're still dealing with something that you can have a better handle on than you are with Donald Trump.
And I would add, you know, amidst all of the false equivalencies of Trump says this, Hillary says that, it's very important to understand, if you can just for a moment ice your visceral dislike of Hillary Clinton, this is a woman who is, as Obama says, perhaps the most qualified person ever to run for president. She has been a senator. She has been Secretary of State. She has traveled to more than 100 countries. She is the consummate technocrat. This is a woman who understands how government runs and how to be effective. And it wasn't so long ago as the very, very underestimated senator from New York, she reached across the aisle in the Senate and actually was able to work with Republicans. So let's not just say that a Hillary victory is a not Trump win. It is actually the possibility of a very effective leader. There are lots of things at play beyond her control, particularly how Congress goes tonight. Mm. But she does have the ability to be a very strong leader. She knows the issue. She knows government.
Okay, well, we're going to take a short break now. You're listening to Midori House here with me, Andrew Muller, along with Tim Marshall and Jeffrey Kaufman. Coming up next, we focus on the "and finally" state, as it is known to newscasters seeking whimsical, ridiculous or terrifying items to sign off with. Why does Florida keep getting to choose the leader of the free world?
Monocle's dedicated network of international bureau and correspondents bring the best global stories to our readers and listeners. Our eagle-eyed team of editors and journalists staffing Bureau in Toronto, New York, Zurich, Istanbul, Singapore, Hong Kong, and Tokyo deliver the best content from the world's most important regions straight to the airwaves of Monocle 24 and the pages of Monocle magazine. We've also got boots on the ground in more than 30 cities worldwide thanks to our comprehensive correspondent network. It's for this reason Monocle brings an up-to-date, informed and engaging commentary from Brasilia to Brussels and from Sydney to Singapore. Monocle, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
You're back with Midori House with me, Andrew Muller. Still with me are Tim Marshall and Jeffrey Kaufman. Tonight, as in all presidential elections this century, Florida will give Europeans the best early idea of whether they're going to get any work done tomorrow. If Trump wins it, it's going to be a long night, perhaps an even longer 4 years. If Clinton prevails in the state, Trump's Twitter feed should probably be kept away from small children visiting vicars and maiden aunts. Florida was, of course, the scene of the Bush versus Gore tug-of-war in 2000.
an important Obama gain in 2008 and the closest contest in the country again in 2012. Jeffrey, you worked and reported from Florida.
Do you really have to tell the world that?
Why does this keep happening? Why is it always Florida?
It's a numbers game. It's really simple. Florida is now actually the third largest state. It surpassed New York a couple of years ago. It has, in an electoral college of 538 votes, you need 270 to win. Florida is 29 votes. It's one-tenth of your route to victory. And when you look at the larger states, you've got California with 55 votes. It is always going to vote Democrat. Texas with 38 votes.
Yes.
Has traditionally, I'm going to say always, there's a slim possibility Hillary Clinton could win it tonight, but traditionally it has always voted Republican. So, and then you've had New York, larger than Florida until recently, also 29 electoral votes, always voting Democratic. So of the large states, it's the only one that swings. Obama won it by about 72,000 votes last time. So it really is the biggest swing state, and so the biggest prize. It is really an interesting political landscape.
Why has that political landscape become interesting, Tim? Is it the growing Hispanic bloc?
Mostly, I think it's that. I mean, there's many things going on in Florida, including alligators climbing out of the sewers and up your toilet, allegedly, because which is why it's such a great state for news. There's the older people who sometimes might swing more to the conservative vote, by which I mean Republican, and because it's, you know, it's God's waiting room, the retirement home of America. So that's one reason why it's interesting to look at it. Another one is the growth of the Hispanics population. In 2000, 77% of people there were white, and it's now down to about 55%.
And it's a huge shift.
Yes,
in the short
huge shift in 16 years, and black people and Latinos tend to lean towards the Democrats. Consequently, as those demographics change, if you can energize that vote, you've got more chance of flipping it into the Democratic party. And of course, what has Mr. Trump done? Mr. Trump has energized the Latino vote, to a lesser extent, the black vote, and he certainly energized any female voter that wasn't sure which way to vote.
I would add to that that when I first moved to Florida for ABC News in 2001, you had this very powerful Cuban presence in South Florida that was hard right Republican, anti-Castro, freeze him out till he dies, don't talk to him. That, you know, the Cuban migration began in 1959, 60, 61. That generation has died out. You now have third generation Cuban Americans born who are really Americans of Cuban heritage. You also have the so-called Marielitos, the people who came in 1980 in the boat lift, who are much less hard right than the earlier arrivals. That very, very influential voting bloc that used to be solidly, reliably Republican is no longer so. And now that Obama has opened up trade and diplomatic relations with Castro's Cuba, the old dinosaurs really have been marginalized. And so you have this massive growth of non-Cuban Hispanics from Central America, South America, and you have this moderating influence within the Cuban population, and that adds up to a very promising night for Hillary Clinton. You know, it's important to note that in early voting in Florida, we've had more than 6 million ballots cast already. That is more than were cast, in the entire Bush 4 election? 5 million ballots were cast.
Already, they've surpassed the turnout of last time. I'd briefly add on that. Almost half of Latinos that have moved to Florida in the last 10 years are from Puerto Rico, and they are already registered to vote. They can vote immediately. And again, because of Mr. Trump's outbursts, those that are perhaps going one way or the other are going to lean one way in particular. And the roadmap, which we refer to, 29. Because if you say, right, I'm going to get to the White House by going up here through these blue states, I'm going to add, and then suddenly behind you, 29 votes have flipped the other way. It doesn't matter if you've got Maine, 4 electoral college votes, Vermont, 3, New Hampshire, 4. You're still nowhere near the big bulk of winning Florida.
Okay, well, finally tonight, there are those of us who can remember sitting in this studio one evening back in June and confidently calling the UK's EU referendum 54-46 for Remain. The possibility of an unlikely Trump victory has been compared, with both hope and trepidation, depending on one's perspective, to Brexit as a potential upsetting of the status quo. But regardless of today's result, might Trump's candidacy have another more pernicious similarity as a divide which cleaves his country into rancorous rival camps for years, if not longer? Jeffrey, if Trump gets beaten tonight, especially if he gets beaten fairly convincingly, does Trumpism go away?
Well, I mean, does Fox News go off the air? Does the right wing, does the marginalized underclass go away? I don't think so. I think that that's Hillary Clinton's biggest challenge. She's got to somehow figure out how to bridge this divide. And I'm not sure, without a strong Congress, I'm not sure she can. You know, she's got to fill this vacancy in the Supreme Court. You've already heard Republicans say they will, for 4 years, try to block her from doing so. I mean, this is just unbelievable. This is hijacking the democratic process, absolutely undermining the American Constitution. So will Trumpism go away? I think partly it will depend on Donald Trump. But listen, let's never underestimate Trump.
Tim, if Hillary Clinton has won this, how does she reach out to the, as it were, deplorables?
By not using that sort of language. I mean, that was a deplorable statement. It's a bit like some of the statements that said about Brexit voters, that they're all racists. Leaving to one side that of the black and ethnic minority voters in the UK, 33% of them voted for Brexit. Were they racist? You know, that sort of language is just nonsense and it's shallow thinking. And she should never have said it. So she's got to stop saying that sort of thing. She does have to reach out across the aisle, and hopefully people like Paul Ryan will reach out back across and try and get some stuff.
Do you think he'll survive?
That's another interesting question. If Trump has gone down, whose careers he takes with it?
A lot of Republicans are going down.
Yes. Yeah. Which whoever survives, who is there to work with Mrs. Clinton? So it's about her behavior, it's about the result of Congress tonight, which is crucial. And then a small part of it is up to Mr. Trump to, if he's lost, to not say it's rigged. Because if he says it's rigged, he's sowing the seeds for an insurgency. And when I say insurgency, there are enough nutters in the United States of America who are armed, who are wearing tinfoil hats and going survivalist courses, who will take him at his word when he talks about rigged and their survival movements. You know, it's dangerous stuff, that sort of language. It's why neither of them should engage in it. It's something that's spreading through the Western world. It's something that we have to a lesser extent here. So it's up to a number of factors. I'm not that optimistic about healing the wounds. I think some of them can be healed, and it's down to the behavior of the people at the top.
Well, with a little over a minute to go, I am going to do the inevitable and invite you to give up hostages to fortune. I'm going to invite you to be the guy who wrote the Dewey Defeats Truman headline on the Chicago
Tribune. Too late. I think I already, at the beginning of this program, committed myself.
Exactly. So I am going to ask you both to call this, and I want a margin as well. I'm going to lay out mine first. I'm going to show you the way. I'm calling it Clinton with 323 Electoral College votes.
I just want to expose to the world that Andrew got that the New York Times is predicting 323 as well. So, you know,
I arrived at that entirely independently.
Did you look at the New York Times today or not?
I may have, but I'd already got the 323. Well, let's see you do better. Come on, then.
I'm guessing.
Go on.
We're all guessing.
Are we going to put a fiver on this and the one closest is going to...
I'll be in that.
I don't gamble, but I'll put a sort of fiver on it.
Yeah, exactly.
296, Clinton wins.
Okay, Jeffrey?
I'm going to just, since we're putting a fire, I'm going to say 324.
324? Are you getting the one? Who are you taking away from 323 and what are you giving
it
back?
I'm just going to say it's going to be more than that. I think it will be.
Newsweek have already shipped out their front cover magazine with a Hillary victory.
I know.
But this has been taken as, I see, it's rigged. It's just the way that publishing works. They're hedging their bets and they're going to get the stuff out there.
You can prove anything with facts, Tim. You should know that by now. Tim Marshall and Jeffrey Kaufman, thank you both very much for joining us. That's all for today's Midori House. It was produced by Tom Hall, researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco and Jake Fitzsimons. Our studio manager was Kieran Matthew Banerjee. Music next, 1900 Section D with Henry Rhys Sheridan, and I'm back for an extended sort of Monocle Daily at 2200, analysing some of the early results coming in through the night. Join us then, and for the Globalist at 7 a.m. UK time, when the world will, hopefully, if all goes according to plan, be waking up to a new US president-elect. Midori House returns at the same time tomorrow, 1800 London. But for now, I'm Andrew Muller. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.